Carrying over from the last segment, we have the former president of PGA of America, Ted Bishop, is joining us. Welcome back, Ted.
Thanks, guys.
I want to talk Ryder Cup. You know, when you were the president, the decision was made to bring Tom Watson back as captain, which when you realistically look at choices for captaincy, probably only Jack Nicklaus or maybe Arnold Palmer brings more respect to the American side in terms of captains than maybe a Tom Watson. So Tom's very high on the list. It didn't seem to work out so well amongst the players. I mean, and you talk about this in the book. What kind of things went on, and what's wrong with our Ryder Cup team?
Well, you know, first of all, the reason we brought Tom Watson in, obviously he's Tom Watson, but secondly, his playing record and the fact that he had won four of his five Open Championships in Scotland and his ability to play well over there was the primary reason. And when we named Tom as the captain, it was a hugely popular choice among everyone. And even as late as the Tuesday of Ryder Cup week, you know, Pete Bevacqua, our CEO of the PGA of America, said to me, if we win this thing, why would we not consider bringing Tom back as the Ryder Cup captain? I mean, he had done an absolutely fantastic job as captain. The statistic that gets overlooked at the 2014 Ryder Cup is the fact that we got beat by 35 shots over the course of 3 days. The Europeans had four of the top five ranked players in the world on their team. You know, we were without Dustin Johnson, who arguably is the best player in the world right now. We were without Jason Duffner, who back in 13 and 14, when he was healthy, was playing great. So, you know, Tom was not operating with a full deck. And the, you know, the fallout from the Ryder Cup, in my opinion, was it was simply one reason. Phil Mickelson on Sunday night was still really ticked off with the fact that he was benched on Saturday and didn't play. And he was a guy that really, I think, kind of got the ball rolling in terms of negative talk about Tom. And you know, you didn't really hear much from the other players. I mean, there were a few ultimately, you know, Ricky Fowler being one that spoke up in Tom's favor a few weeks later. But it was a very polarizing issue. So that forced the PGA of America, still under my leadership, to at least do something a little bit different. We appointed this task force, which was made up primarily of players and former captains, with the hope of making some changes that would be important in the Ryder Cup going forward. And pertaining to how we would name captains, basically there was a policy that was put in that says if you're going to be a Ryder Cup captain, you need to be a vice captain at least once or twice before that. And if that's how the Europeans do it, and they've had great success, strangely enough, Davis Love was the only former Ryder Cup captain who had served as an assistant captain in I think it was, I can't remember the year, 2000 maybe, when he was an assistant. So there's going to be some continuity in how we pick captains going forward. But at the end of the day, it's always going to be the same. We have to play better. And that's why we've gotten beat consistently over the past couple of decades.
Well, and one of the excerpts from the book that I saw, you know, talked about the fact that, you know, Tom's sitting there watching these guys, and they're out there playing money games during the practice rounds. They're hitting to the actual flags that were on the green and not hitting to spots where the flags were going to be. I mean, are our players preparing wrong for the Ryder Cup? It just seems like the Europeans do things so much differently in terms of getting prepared than our guys are.
Well, I think that's a great observation, and I had some lengthy discussions with Steve Stricker after the Ryder Cup, and, you know, Steve noted some things that the Europeans were doing that we had never done. And some of these things, I don't know how well received they would be by our players if we ask them to do it. And that's what was kind of ironically sad to me with the criticism that Tom got. I thought that, you know, he was the ultimate player's captain. He let these guys prepare the way they felt like they needed to prepare. And, you know, we were sitting there in a golf cart in the number one fairway on Sunday and with Zach Johnson's match, the last match out of the day, and Tom looked over at me and he said, I'll tell you where I really screwed up this week. He said, I did not make these guys prepare for a Ryder Cup the way you need to. And he went into some of those things that you just talked about. And so you know, I don't know how that's going to change going forward, but the Europeans have a different mindset, and it's been successful for them. And who knows when our players will start thinking differently.
Yeah, I mean, and to your point, I mean, it always seems like for some reason the Americans are favored. And I've been talking about this for months now, is that if you start looking at the teams, the guys that are qualified on each side right now, the American squad on paper should be the favorite because there's like five rookies that are going to be on the European team. So here we are right back in the situation where the Americans on paper are going to be favored, and it comes down to it. Are they going to be able to win?
Yeah, well, it's a great question. And, you know, I mean, when you look at who's on the team right now, I mean, obviously Johnson is the stud worldwide, but, you know, Spieth is not playing well. Phil had a great Open Championship, but you really don't know what you're going to get from him. Zach Johnson really hasn't putted well all year. You know, Bubba Watson's been hot and cold in Ryder Cups. Holmes is on there. He hasn't been there in the past. Koepka's on there right now, and he's battling an injury. And then you got guys like Snedeker and Kuchar and Fowler and Reed that are, you know, kind of at the tail end. And I think what's going to be interesting in this PGA Championship, Mark and Mike, is if somebody like Jim Furyk or Steve Stricker has a tournament similar to what Stricker had in the Open Championship, and there's twice the Ryder Cup points available in this major championship, and they vault all of a sudden, you know, up near that 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th position, you know, are now all of a sudden two of these guys who have already been named as assistant captains, are they going to be guys that Davis Love is going to turn around and pick? So I who knows? But until we start playing better, I don't care who it is and what it looks like on paper, we're going to continue to get beat.
Yeah, and people want to say, oh, it's chemistry, or, oh, you know, somehow the Euros are more a team and they're more patriotic. They're not even from the same country. I mean, so they can't be more patriotic. It can't mean more to them than it does to our guys. So it can't be chemistry and it can't be patriotism. What is it? Is it that just European golfers and juniors play more team events? I mean, are they just smarter than us? What do we have to admit here in order to fix it?
Well, yeah, you know, I can go back to that very first conversation that I had on the phone with Tom Watson in November of 2012 when we talked about the lack of success on these Ryder Cup teams from an American standpoint, particularly in foreign Ryder Cups. And I said, why do you think that is? And he said, well, very simply, right now, he said, I think they have better players. And I said, why do you say that? And he said, well, if you look at the golf swings and you look at the fundamentals of our players and you look at how those things hold up under pressure or bad weather, he said, in my opinion, that's what gives them the edge, Ryder Cup in and Ryder Cup out. And so I think you can't discount the fact that they maybe do have better players. And if you look at the world golf rankings, and obviously if you're playing on the European Tour, you don't have the opportunity to earn world ranking points the same way you do if you're playing on the PGA Tour. So I think it kind of distorts the talent and the abilities of some of these guys from Europe. And to your point, you know, you've got four or five guys there that are going to be Ryder Cup rookies, Willett being one of them. I mean, these guys are excellent players, and they could come over here and beat us again.
Well, we're pleased to be on with Ted Bishop, former president of the PGA of America and author of Unfriended, my favorite book title of the year, The Power Brokers, Political Correctness, and Hypocrisy in Golf. I want to take you back to what you said in the first segment about this book being almost at least part of it is a study in political correctness and how we handle social media. I mean, your incident with Poulter took place at the end of 2014, again, just with just 29 days left in your tenure, and whether or not it's been reported or people believe they were looking for a reason to get rid of you. I guess my question is, for similar comments in 2016, doesn't seem like it would be that big a deal. And was the PGA of America at the time just not ready to deal with someone who was unspoken or set policy about how Twitter would be used? Where do you stand on that in this study?
Well, I get into the book with that stuff, and you know, I think it was new ground for the PGA of America. We didn't have any written policies on social media use. You know, we had a little bit of media training on what to do and what not to do. I'm not going to make any excuses, but I'm 62 years old. I grew up in the Midwest, and all my life we talked out here about throwing like a girl, running like a girl, and those weren't meant to be sexist comments.
Right.
In any way, shape, or form. I mean, girls would use that same type of terminology. So, You know, when I said that, I could have used immature. If I'd have called Poulter a little boy, nobody probably would have made a big deal about that. But, you know, I've had people criticize me and say, well, you shouldn't have said anything at all. Well, the fact of the matter is, particularly in Watson's case, and what happened was Poulter had released a new book, Off Limits, and he had smashed Faldo and Watson both. And I was working with Nick at the Greenbrier at a junior series when this happened. And obviously, Tom Watson was a volunteer for the PGA of America just like I was. He didn't get paid to be the Ryder Cup captain. He was a good friend of mine, and I felt compelled, you know, to stand up for him and didn't feel that Poulter really had any dog in the hunt and had no reason to criticize our captain. So I make no excuses on defending those two guys. I could have used a better choice of words, no question about it. But I do think, to your point, it's been kind of interesting to watch how political correctness has evolved over the past 18 months. And I think it was a knee-jerk reaction. Should I have paid some kind of penalty for what I did? Absolutely. I mean, at the very least, I should have apologized, which I wanted to, and I go into the book about how I was not put in a position where I could do that by the PGA of America. There were a lot of different ways that it could have been handled, and probably, truthfully, the PGA of America would tell you that if it happened again, they probably would handle it differently. But at this point, it is what it is.
And also on top of that, I mean, Sergio Garcia made some comments with, you know, relative to the fried chicken comment about Tiger Woods, and TaylorMade did not dump him, yet they dumped you. So good on Callaway for picking you up as well.
Yeah, that's exactly right, and I really appreciated that from Callaway, and you know, I'll be a loyal supporter of theirs. I think, you know, one of the things that came out of this whole deal for me, guys, was you know, Tom Watson was selected by the PGA of America to be inducted into the PGA of America Hall of Fame in September of 2015, and you know, Tom respectfully denied that opportunity based on the way that my circumstances were handled by the PGA of America. And I think that of all the things that I've been fortunate enough to experience and do in golf, probably nothing means more to me today than my friendship with Tom Watson. And I just felt that was I'm still humbled by that gesture, and that's how strongly he felt about it. And you know, and I appreciated that.
Well, when this all happened, when this all went down, we had you on, and both of us, for what it's worth, supported your position that this was a comment made like any other comment. He was acting like a little girl. So what? Most people probably read it, thought, okay, that's kind of clever, that's kind of funny, and it's probably kind of proper and correct as well. And then somebody somewhere said, wait, we can't have him say that. And then all of the jackals circled and said, oh yeah, you're right, that was wrong, you can't refer to this guy as a little girl. And certainly the intent was never to insult him in that manner, but to make a point about his position in the argument overall. I guess I wonder, you know, has your personal policy about Twitter and how you're, you know, with the things you tweet, has that changed for you? Are you less outspoken? Are you gun shy? Heck, are you and Poulter still following each other on Twitter?
I've still follow him on Twitter. It's interesting for me to see some of the things that he says on Twitter. And I think one of the fundamental problems that I had when I sent that tweet out, his handle was on it. So it went to his 1.5 million followers. I happened to have 5,000 followers at the time that I sent that tweet out. So you can imagine the response publicly to my tweets would have been highly against me, his 1.5 million followers getting it. So, yeah, I've learned a valuable lesson. You know, anytime you do something you think could be remotely controversial, you better read it, reread it, and read it again before you hit that send button. And, hey, It was a stupid thing for me to do. I had a lot of good media training, and I should have known better. I really should have. I'm not going to make any excuses for that whatsoever. And it was a very expensive lesson for me to have to pay in many respects. And most notably, the disappointing thing is that I've given 25 years of service to the PGA of America. I've been on the road 770 days in the 6 years that I was a PGA officer, and that doesn't count the numerous hours I spent on PGA business when I was here at my facility as a volunteer, not getting paid. And you'd like to think when you screwed up and you put yourself in a bad situation that the association would get behind you and that they would use their media resources to really help bail you out. And I think this could have been solved very simply with an apology.
Well, we dig you. We love your candor. We love the book. And we're just curious, what are you up to now? Tell us what you're doing now.
Well, it's pretty much 24/7 here at my facility, the Legends Golf Club. My college degree was in agronomy and turf management, so I've kind of enjoyed getting more into the outside operation here. My daughter and son-in-law work with me, and they're picking up some of the things that I would do as a GM. So I've been more or less the golf course superintendent this summer, which has been a little bit challenging with the weather that we've been having, but I love that, and I don't know what the future holds. I really enjoyed writing the book. There's a part of me that would love to still be involved with golf, you know, at some level again. And I don't know if that'll ever happen. You know, I think the title Unfriended is very appropriate in a lot of ways because there's a lot of people out there, media outlets, associations, just based on their relationship with the PGA of America, that will never have anything to do with me because they don't want to broach that relationship. And you know, I understand that. I put myself in that situation. But, you know, I'm looking forward to the rest of my life, whatever that is. And if people want to buy the book, they can go to Amazon.com and get the Kindle or hardback version, or they can go to TedBishop.org, and I'll be happy to send them a signed copy.
Well, Ted, man, we really appreciate you getting on here with us, doing a double segment, and we look forward to anything that you run in the future because, man, we're behind you 100%.
Well, Mark and Mike, I've always enjoyed talking with you, and I know everybody in the Charlotte area appreciates all you do to promote golf.
All right. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you, guys.